If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here at Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by my mentor, the man behind the magazine that gave me my wrestling opinions I have today, including my absolute love of John Cena. It's Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, not bad at all. How are you doing, Kenny?
I'm good. Hulk got his staples out today. So he is now back on the road to recovery, so that's good. I've been doing tidying up to try and, you know, deal with the isolation blues. So I basically gutted my bedroom the other day, so I had 3 full bin bags of rubbish that I was threw out. So I've been very productive.
Well, you have to be. You've got to find things to do, haven't you? You know, you've got to keep your mind occupied. You've got to... All those jobs that you didn't think you'd ever find the time to do, well, there's no excuse now. Get on with them. So, yeah, I've got a lot of jobs in my house to be getting on with, but I'm not going to bore people with those details today because we've got so much wrestling news and happenings and developments to get through.
We do. We got loads. You know, it's funny because yesterday I kind of found myself having to just... sort of put down the news because there was a report that came out yesterday about, you know, the idea that that, you know, you'll not be able to there'll be a medical expert said there'll be no sporting events or no wrestling till at least mid 2021, and that just made me want to bang my head off against the wall. But then the same day you got another medical expert who was saying that he thinks there'll be a vaccine by October. So the truth is you don't really know, but I think that, you know, it's just better to focus on short term at the moment because nobody really knows where things are going to be in 6 months or not.
Absolutely. And that has been definitely the psychology of the government's lockdown restrictions by not stating, yes, this is going to be for 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. It's like, well, we're going to do it for 3 weeks and then we'll review it. Because we as a nation and really the world, you know, has to process these things in small bite-sized chunks. If we're told, I mean, I know people who are in the vulnerable group have been told that they've got to isolate for 12 weeks. But for the rest of us, if we've been told, yeah, you're going to have to, you know, practice social distancing and you're not going to be able to do anything except for go to the shops for your food for 12 weeks, I don't think that would have been as well received as it has been. And definitely this information about what might happen in future, I saw that report as well regarding sporting events and concerts and, you know, theoretically pubs and clubs and cafes as well, because if you're in a pub, you can't really practice social distancing. So are they going to stay shut for another 15, 16 months? I mean, I guess that's conceivable that that might happen. But my God, how long is it going to take us to pay the money back that the governments will have to borrow to prop the economy up in the interim if it's really going to take that long? So, yeah, and I think also no one really knows what's going to happen, which is, you know, really takes us back to all the comments about WrestleMania and why Vince felt that it had to take place, because there's no way of knowing how long it's going to be before an event can take place in front of fans. Maybe it will be October. Maybe it'll be July. You know, maybe it'll be December. We don't know. So to me, that was why he made the decision to produce WrestleMania in the fashion that he did. And also so he could continue the schedule, which is, you know, we saw this week from, especially from Raw, which was kind of, was a full sort of regular show, wasn't it, really? There wasn't any, there was just a few highlights from WrestleMania, but mostly it was all first run matches. And it seems to me that they've decided that, yes, we're just going to, it's going to be business as usual. We're going to carry on. We're going to include as much first-run content as we can, because this is the way it's going to be right now. And also, what's more, we need to do this because we've got money in the bank 3 weeks on Sunday, and we need to do all these qualifiers and set all these matches up, and you know, we need to press on as usual with money back, money in the bank. And obviously, if WrestleMania had been postponed, how would they have done Money in the Bank? You know, it's, you can understand why WWE's done what it's done. And really, I think he's now in for the long haul at the Performance Center. This is the way it's going to be. And hopefully it won't be until the end of the year. Hopefully it'll only be until sometime in the summer that, you know, they can start running events again in larger arenas with crowds. But we will see, Kenny, won't we?
We will see. Yeah, I know Donald Trump had hosted a call with sports leagues this past week, and he was sort of saying that August was an optimistic thing. I think a lot of other people are saying that they think, you know, Thanksgiving is going to be more likely. But you know, I don't think we'll be in full lockdown until next July. I think that, no. I just can't imagine that that would be the case. But you know, they're going to have to. The thing is, it's in the government's interest for this to go away as quick as possible. So
sure,
there will be, you know, soon, if there is not change, there will become a lot more testing and a lot more, you know, stuff out there to make things easier. So we will see that kind of coming into fruition. I did want one of the major talking points, I guess, off the back of this that we should mention is that yesterday, WWE, I think Orange County, which is the county where the Performance Center is, they had like a daily meeting or a weekly meeting or whatever, and somebody asked the question about WWE and, you know, how they're allowed to keep doing shows. So the Orange County Mayor, Jerry Demings, was asked about WWE being allowed to continue operations during a press conference, and he said that originally WWE was deemed non-essential, but that changed after talk with the Office of Governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis. And the Orange County mayor said, "I think initially there was a review that was done that they were not initially deemed an essential business. With some conversation with the governor's office regarding the governor's stay-at-home order, they were deemed an essential business. Therefore, they're allowed to remain open." So that is where things are. What do you make of that story? And that they are essentially going to be continuing operations and continuing doing these shows live every Monday, Wednesday and Friday.
Well, it's an essential business for the Power Slam podcast. So, I mean, he's right there.
I mean, the people I feel sorry for, I mean, we should mention WWE have said, if you don't want to work, you don't have to. So that is, I know, I mean, but then that's kind of like, you know, so, you know, in the UK, it's like there's the offer of a mortgage freeze, which sounds great. I mean, it's not really, it sounds good, but you're still going to have to pay all that interest and all that mortgage off. It's just that you're not having to pay it right now. And I think if Braun Strowman was to turn around tomorrow and say, oh, you know, I don't want to do it, you know, the time will be added to his contract. That is the reality of what would probably happen.
Yeah.
But I think the people I feel sorry for are not the people in Florida, but the people who live in other parts of the US, because they essentially won't be able to really ever quarantine themselves or see their family, because if they go home, they might be endangering their family. So it's a very murky situation, but I guess legally, as of now, they are essential business and it will go ahead for as long as possible. You just got to hope that, you know, a lot of talent have spoken out and said that at the tapings, there are a lot of kind of precautions taken. People are getting tested. Yeah. So you just got to hope they're doing the best.
Yeah, I mean, they've been doing this from the start, haven't they? I mean, they have made a, you know, I mean, obviously, wrestlers can't self-isolate when they're in the middle of a match. Neither can the referee and other talent. And we saw the announcers on Raw this week all stood very close to each other. But, I mean, I believe WWE is doing medical screening before it will allow people to perform or work at the tapings. At least that's what they're saying. I mean, the fact, you know, I was being flippant there, of course, about WWE being an essential business. I do find that kind of hard to comprehend how it can be classed as an essential business. But I believe that the guy in question, Florida's a Isn't the top man in Florida a big pal of Donald Trump? I believe that to be true.
He is. There's also, now I'm not one to cast aspersions here, but there is a super PAC led by Linda McMahon.
Indeed.
Who are looking to re-elect Donald Trump, who have a lot of money to spend in Florida. So,
yes.
Money talks.
I mean, Vince has obviously been a big Republican. He donated to the Trump campaign back in 16.
Wait a minute, Vince McMahon's a Republican? Breaking news here on the First Lap podcast.
I mean, I was aware of it, but it was only something that was sort of hammered over the head when they had the Bill Clinton impersonator, and he made a couple of appearances, and they were mocking him. And obviously they mocked Obama on the air as well, at least once, maybe twice.
Do you remember when they famously had a match on Raw, and I think this was maybe, I think it was 2008, and it was when the Democratic nominees were being considered, and it was between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, and they had a Hillary Clinton impersonator woman come out for a match on Raw. She came out to Real American, and it was Barack Obama. When you think about this now, how they got away with this in 2008. So Barack Obama came out to the Rocks theme, and it was like he was Barack Obama, and he had like monkey ears attached to his head, like big, you know, sticky out kind of chimpanzee-esque ears. And then they had this awful kind of wrestling match. So, and then, you know, even back in 2000, I think it was the year before that, 2007, where there was a Donald Trump impersonator beat a Rosie O'Donnell impersonator on Raw.
Yeah, I remember that one. They had that famous feud, didn't they? Mm-hmm. The one I always remember was they managed to find footage of Obama in the gym, and he had these tiny little dumbbells. And, you know, he was only a slender fellow as Obama, much like myself. And
you are Cumbria as Obama. I've heard this numerous times.
And they had this footage of him in the gym with these little weights. And I remember they screened that. And I thought, I bet Vince looking at that thinking, look at that guy. He should be lifting heavier than that. Our president should be lifting 10 times the weight of those weights that he's got in his hands. I just remember that's one that's very much imprinted on my memory of Obama in the gym. And I could just imagine Vince's reaction when he saw the size of the weights that Obama was lifting. So that was one that I always recall. But obviously the Clinton ones as well. There was he did an appearance, was it one of the Survivor Series, where he was obsessed with Sonny? He had Sonny sat on a knee?
Yeah, I think that was the 95 Survivor Series, but it was in Washington, I think.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So there was that one as well. But yeah, getting back to now, yeah, the top man in Florida, he's a big pal of Donald Trump. And, I'm not suggesting, I'm not casting any aspersions here. You know, I mean, you can join the dots, but I mean, you could be wrong and it could just be a coincidence, all of this. But, you know, in all seriousness, it is hard to fathom how a WWE can be classed as an essential business, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, it's a stretch. It's a real stretch. But, you know, and I mean, you almost kind of wish that the USA Network and Fox would come out and just say, we don't want you to run.
Yeah,
we will put in writing whatever you need that while this is going on, we do not want you to run. So they need to also be held responsible.
Well, they do. But I mean, I've been thinking about this as well. And you could say, OK, WWE is not an essential business. And that's true. It isn't. Right. And this is almost the sort of unfair comparison, because the businesses services that I'm going to mention are essential. But you've got a lot of people out there who are working in environments where they cannot practice social distancing. So there's lots of people who are at work now, whether on building sites, supermarket workers. Obviously, this is essential. You know, the recycling people, the bin men, obviously police. Obviously, this is essential. Firefighters, you know, lots of different people are working at the moment. I realize they have to work, and of course WWE doesn't, but there's lots of people who are working in close proximity with each other at the moment. So, you know, they're doing it because obviously they have to. So in a sense, you know, people who work in, obviously anyone who's been in Sainsbury's or Asda or Morrison's will see staff that sometimes are very close to each other. Obviously they have to be there because we all need to shop. But you can say that about wrestlers as well. It's like, you know, they're in close proximity to each other because obviously they're wrestlers. So, I mean, you know, if people can do it fairly, obviously there will be cases here where people are going to contract it at work. Maybe this isn't such a great analogy after all. But my point is that lots of people are working in close proximity with each other right now, mm-hmm. mostly because they have to. And the WWE people are as well. And yeah, you can say they don't have to and it's not an essential business, but they're not doing anything that lots of other people aren't doing. That's my point.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if we take away the performers, because, you know, it's their choice whether they want to do it or not. I mean, there is still going to be content for us to talk about. And I guess, you know, there will be some escapism. So there is that argument to it. I'm not saying I think they should be running, but if they are going to run, then I guess that's just the way it's going to be. I mean, it's interesting because I think there's going to be a lot of sports later this year, from football, not American football. Football, American football, basketball, baseball, who are going to have to start playing in front of empty arenas.
Yeah.
And that is going to start being the norm for about the next 6 months, probably. So, WWE almost have a head start on that.
Yeah.
If you told me 8 weeks ago that, like, I'd kill to just have 50 people in the performance center for a crowd, who knew? I'll never take crowds for granted again, Finn. I will never take the quiet crowd of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for granted ever again.
Oh, you will do. Because once they're back, it'll very quickly become normalised, as everything is, and we will forget about these times when there was no crowds.
Okay, bring me back down to earth, Finn. I do want to mention, before we get into more wrestling chat, you actually, as part of your Easter break, decided, I couldn't quite believe this, almost fell off my chair, you decided to stick on the latest featuring from the Transformers universe, Bumblebee, starring one Jonathan Cena.
I did indeed. I watched it on Sunday night. It was the network premiere in the UK on Channel 4. I watched it all the way through. I mean, I quite enjoyed it. I didn't think it was as good as, like, the first Transformers film. But I thought it was still I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a pretty good movie. I mean, Cena really wasn't the star of the film. It was Hayley Steinfeld, who was I guess she was late teens, 18, 19 in it. Oh, no, she was 18. It was her 18th birthday in the film. She was the star of it. She was really the emotional beating heart of that film. Her and Bumblebee, and that was, you know, relationship between those two. I thought Cena was a lot of fun in it. He was kind of sending himself up. It was funny at the end as Bumblebee, because Cena plays like an officer. He's like a soldier. And at the end of it, Cena salutes Bumblebee, you know, just like Cena does in his when he comes out for his matches. Mm-hmm. I almost had a tear in my eye, Kenny. Almost had a tear in my eye when Cena did that salute. But I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. And
I also appreciated that in your Facebook post, you found time during your Bumblebee promotion to take a shot at me. don't know what I did to deserve that. Drive-by shooting of a comment.
Well, I know you can take it. I know you can take it, Kenny. Somebody, that's why I did it.
Somebody said to Finn, you know, Kenny will be marking out, and Finn said, doesn't take much. What a prick. Well, I'm glad that Bumblebee was good.
It was a fun movie. Some of the Transformers movies, particularly the previous one, which I think was called The Last Night, that was just garbage. Absolutely ludicrous. But this was more of a story, there was far more emphasis on the humans and the relationship between humans and Bumblebee and the other Transformers. I thought it was really well done. So I would recommend it to anyone out there.
Okay, so we should mention, it's not technically wrestling, but it is news. The XFL is no more. XFL, I think it was over the weekend, put a statement out saying that they would be sort of releasing all performers and staff from their contracts. No plans for a future season. And then yesterday, the XFL filed for Chapter 2 bankruptcy, or Chapter 11 bankruptcy. I think it was Chapter 11. But they've filed for bankruptcy in the US. So XFL again, is no longer. Talk through kind of, you know, they came back. Would you say it was considered successful when they came back? Do you think that, I mean, because you've got to think that coronavirus is really going to take a toll on a lot of established businesses, and for new startups, it's just kind of a, it's basically going to be a no-go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a football fan. I didn't watch any of the games. And had I watched them, I wouldn't have been able to tell you whether the games were good or they weren't. From the reviews I read, they got far more right than they got wrong this time. This was supposedly, in terms of gameplay and the whole way it was put together, was a huge improvement on the previous experiment back in, when was it, 2001, wasn't it? 2001? Yeah, 2001. That's right.
Yeah, 2001.
And so from what I understand, you know, a lot of people were very disappointed about this, not just because so many people lost their jobs, but because it was actually, I think the first games did fairly well in terms of ratings and the numbers did decline, but it wasn't like the massive drop off that the league suffered back in 2001, where they opened with a really good number and it just fell off a cliff from like basically week two. So, yeah, I think there was a lot of people really disappointed that this happened, because they were onto something that potentially could have been successful over the long haul had the COVID-19 pandemic not hit and forced them to, cancel the rest of the season. And the result of that, they've ended up closing. So I think the word they used was suspending the season, which was kind of misleading, because then it was announced that, no, actually, it's over. It's not coming back, and they've filed for bankruptcy. So, it's obviously a real shame for all the people who were involved and all the people who had obviously learned from the mistakes of, you know, the first XFL to try and make this thing work and to give people, good games of football. But as I say, I'm not a football fan, so had I watched it, I wouldn't have been able to tell whether it was any good or it wasn't. So I'm not somebody who can comment on those things. But obviously, yeah, real shame for everyone involved, who potentially could have had, it could have been renewed for another season or further seasons. And, that would have been a great career for them. So, it's obviously a real shame. I think there's a lot of people out there gloating about it. But lots of people out there will use anything as a opportunity to take a shot at Vince McMahon and, revel in his misery, reveling in the misery of others. Kenny is not it's not a nice characteristic, I don't feel.
No. I mean, I from what I've heard, the XFL this time around was much better, and it was much, if you've not seen it, I would recommend the ESPN 30 for 30 on the XFL, which was done a couple of years ago, which ended up being the catalyst for Charlie Ebersold, Dick Ebersold's son, to create his own AFL, I think it was called, and then that prompted Vince to bring back the XFL. And I think it'd done pretty well. The ratings were declining, but they were not declining anywhere near the rate they were the first time. Yeah. So they might have got a second season out of it, and maybe they could have built on it there. But I think what bothers a lot of people, and I get why it bothers people, is because you can see it as unfair, but it is legal, so it's not, why would you not do it? Is that how can, Vince McMahon, when he puts all this money into this venture, basically claim bankruptcy and not have to kind of pay the money, because he has money. But, in America, your personal finances and a business's finances are very different, and you can claim bankruptcy on something without your own personal funds being affected. That's just the way it is. And if he's allowed to do that, then why would he not do it?
So, it's the same in our country. I think it's the same in most countries that have free market conditions. I mean, it's definitely the same in the UK.
Yeah.
If you set up a limited company or anything like that and it crashes, then your personal assets are protected. That's the way it is over here as well. So, yeah, I can understand why people are pissed off about it. I understand that, absolutely. And
part of me does feel, I don't want to say I feel sorry for Vince, because he's fine, but he tried the Football League again. He had the best of intentions with it. He did a better job this time round. By all accounts, was better football this time round. Yeah. And COVID-19 happened. I did an interview with somebody yesterday, Lewis at WrestleTalk. I did an interview with him yesterday, and he had asked me about COVID and how it's affecting me and Inside the Ropes. And it's like, when I left What Culture in 2017, I very specifically wanted to set up other revenue streams for Inside the Ropes so that it could keep going. And if truth be told, if we didn't have Patreon and we didn't have YouTube and stuff like that, we wouldn't be able to keep doing what we're doing right now. But those other streams had to be set up in case anything happened on the live event side. And that's something that I had to set up. And if I hadn't set that up, then, you know, I'd be in a lot of trouble right now. But I think it's one of those things of when you're clever and you do what you need to do and then you still kind of get fucked, that's when I feel quite bad. And I feel like Vince tried to do all the right stuff and, you know, there's just no way that the XFL could recover from COVID-19 and the sort of, you know, because it's not like we can say, okay, everything starts back October 1st, 100%, and you can plan for that. Because yeah. October 1st might not be possible. So it was kind of felt like an inevitability after we knew that this was going to be sort of the new temporary norm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and just, you know, in all the time I've been in business, I've worked for other people and their businesses have gone bust and they've been limited companies and I've lost out financially. And, you know, so I know what it feels like. I've lost out on quite large sums of money in the past a few times. And it is extremely annoying. And you feel like, you know, you feel like you've been robbed. So, you know, I'm certainly not being, you know, making light of what's happened there. And so there's a lot of people who will have unpaid, you know, there's lots of people who will be severely affected by this bankruptcy and who themselves will potentially be sunk by it as well. So I'm certainly not making light of that, having been there myself. All I'm saying is this is the way our laws are in the UK and in the USA as well, that you file for bankruptcy and your personal assets are protected. That was just making that statement.
Yes.
Certainly not trying to justify it because I have been, you know, I've certainly, you know, been on the wrong end of that situation myself a few times.
So, I mean, I can't quite believe that we are going to be spending time on this, but we are. We both watched the pilot episode of The Big Show. I'm very rarely struggle for words, Finn.
Well, do you want me to go first?
You go first, because I just don't really know how to tackle this.
Okay, right. I thought it was going to improve as I was watching it. I hoped it would get up. I hoped it would get better. But it never did. It just never happened, you know. And this is a show that WWE told us. They were boasting about this on Raw this week. It debuted as the number 3 show of the week on Netflix in the States. Do you think it will retain that position in next week's chart, Kenny?
Well, do you know, full disclosure, I watched it today because I left it as long as possible for I had to watch it. And it's still number 9 on Netflix, the UK chart. I am amazed that it is in the top 10. I was watching it and I got so kind of just bored and sort of baffled that it was a real thing, baffled that it had been commissioned, baffled that the people in the audience were laughing at the jokes that they were. And then
it was canned laughter, Kenny.
I mean, it'd have to be, wouldn't it? It'd have to be for that. But then, so I'm sitting watching it and I'm, you know, I'm getting bored and I'm on my phone and whatever. And I look up and I was going, God, this is never ending. But what had happened was I'd got into such Stockholm syndrome, I'd rolled over onto episode 2.
Oh, no.
So I had to just go, right, enough's enough.
That's
35 minutes of my life I'm never getting back. I will say this. It is as good as any Disney Channel sitcom from the late 90s.
Well, in short, it's as good as indicated by the trailer. I've done a little review, right? So in the Big Show, Paul White plays like a bumbling, larger-than-life version of himself. He's kind of like Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
But he is called in the show by his wife and his children, Big Show.
Yeah, I mean, so it's kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm, only without the intelligence and humour. I mean, it's U-rated, so it's obviously aimed at children, right? But I mean, you know, a lot of these kids' comedies have some like pretty sharp, witty humour in there that's aimed at adults as well who might be watching it with their kids. I mean, there probably was some jokes in here other than the JJ, the youngest daughter. She made a reference to loving the smell of jet fuel in the morning, which is like a reference to Apocalypse Now. And there probably were some other jokes in there for adults, but I mean, you know, I was really sort of losing the will to live while watching this, and probably, like, you know, they went in one ear and out the other. So anyway, it's in the first episode, Lola, that's Big Show's daughter from his first marriage, his eldest daughter, she travels to Tampa, Florida to live with Show and his second wife and their two daughters. Q, lost luggage jokes and difficulties fitting in with her new environment. Lola plays ice hockey, but there is no girls hockey team at her new high school. So she tries out for the boys team and then shows there, and he takes a bump on the ice from her to prove how tough she is and to get her over. I think Show and the JJ character, who's the youngest of the three daughters, they had the most jokes. But I mean, the jokes were so feeble. And what's more, it was as if the writers realized the jokes were weak. So they crammed in as many as possible in the hope that, you know, one or two might hit. One or two might scrape through and, you know, poke a leg above this general scrummage. I mean, this is a cavalcade of misfires in terms of humour. I mean, to me, it's like you've got obtrusive canned laughter, clinically clean show home sets, and really non-existent comic timing displayed by pretty much everyone, including Paul White. Felt to me like low rent, hurriedly thrown together. To me, it was like substitute programming for something better that had been delayed due to the coronavirus pandemic. So no, I didn't enjoy it at all.
that's really how you feel. It was. I think Big Show was likable in it. I think he was likable. I mean, we got a Mick Foley reference about a minute and a half in, yeah, when his daughter was like, "Stop comparing me to Mick Foley." I did laugh at that. But and then, like, you know, he goes in, he's talking to the teacher and the PE coach. The PE coach calls him, was it Double Stuff? I think it was Double Stuff, which was the thing he didn't want to be called.
Yeah.
And he's got like a little 10 kilogram dumbbell, and he's acting like it's 100 kilograms, and he comes from a military family, and they were doing all the paint by numbers jokes. And then, now I don't know if this was the first episode or the second one, because bear in mind I ended up watching too long. Was it in the first episode where all the women and the mum and the daughters were doing like a slideshow on a about like living in Florida and humidity and the beach and all that kind of stuff? Or is that
must have been episode two. Okay. I don't remember that.
So they're doing this kind of like, you know, show and tell thing in the house to Big Show. And, you know, there's all these kind of things on a drawing board that they're showing. And I was watching it, I was just kind of going, these people have been cast by Netflix in a worldwide production. These are the people who were the best that they found. How bad were the other people?
Yeah.
Like, it was just so... But then I was my flatmate, she was working from home today, so she was kind of in the living room as I was watching it. And of course, she gave me the look of like, why the fuck are you watching this?
Yeah.
But she even said to me, she said, oh, I saw this on Netflix yesterday and I was going to watch it because I thought it was a reality show and it might get me into wrestling a little bit because I know that you like wrestling. I said, no, it's sadly not. And I'm sitting watching it and I said, do you ever just get that? Do you ever in your mind just kind of go, God, you know, we have it so lucky that we can, that we have British comedy all the way around, because it's like British comedy has so much more like sort of intelligence to it in a lot of ways. And I feel like sometimes when you watch like some American stuff that you can just, your brain hurts because it's so dumbed down. And this just kind of felt like it was one of those, you just don't need to use your brain. You can just breeze by the whole time, which is fine. But yeah, this is, I mean, God bless the Big Show. Fair play, you know, let him do him. And if he gets, I mean, I think he might actually get a second season out of this, which is a baffling thing to think about, but I think he will.
Well, I mean, quite possibly, since it's done decent numbers for the first or second week, and clearly it hasn't cost that much money to produce. I mean, you can see that everything about it is really cheap and cheerful. So I can imagine that they can do another 8 or 10 episodes of this on the cheap. And if it fills up the schedule and people watch it, that's all that really matters. I mean, what gets me is that the Netflix stamp is supposed to be like a symbol of, quality. Kind of like if you watch a HBO show or a Showtime show, then before it airs that it's going to be to a certain standard. So I think really Netflix is doing themselves a disservice by associating themselves with this. I mean, you're just talking there about American humor, and I was actually kind of serious about the whole Curb Your Enthusiasm thing. I'm not expecting the Big Show to be anywhere near as good as that, of course, but it's almost kind of like, a kid's version of that, where Show's playing himself, like a fictionalized version of himself, like Larry David does in Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I just think it could have been a lot better, really. I mean, it just seemed like they were just cramming so many jokes in, and you've just got all the cliches, like every cliche you can imagine is there. And sure, I guess Show's kind of likable, but to me, there's just no comic timing at all. And I remember later that day, and this might seem like an unfair comparison as well, because obviously Friends was a very good show, but I was just watching a little bit of an episode of Friends, and you're like, my God, the comic timing here, this is how you do comedy. And Big Show, I mean, Show's been in, how long's he been in showbiz now? 95, he got into wrestling. So, I mean, 25 years. He's done a lot of comedy over the years in WC. Well, he didn't do any in
He was
WCW.
in The Waterboy, that movie with Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I mean, but he's done lots of different comedy skits in the past, hasn't he? So he should be able to pull this off, I would have thought. But it just seemed to me to be just thrown together, and just there wasn't really any good jokes.
I think you hit the nail on the head, and the best way we can finish talking about this is the Big Show is like Curb Your Enthusiasm without the intelligence or the humor.
Exactly.
Nailed it. Okay, so let's move on to talk about some wrestling. SmackDown took place last Friday night. We're probably not going to go through the whole show because it's not really that interesting to go through all of it, but there are obviously a couple of things we want to get into. So in 2 weeks' time, or I guess now in like 10 days' time, Finn, there is going to be the start of the 25-year celebration of Triple H. How excited are you for this celebration, and how long do you think it's going to last?
25 years. I'm doing backflips. If I wasn't, in front of this microphone, with my headphones on, I'd be so excited I wouldn't be able to sit still. No, I mean, in all seriousness, maybe it will be okay. Some of these things that they do are better than you expect them to be. And I mean, he has been in the business a long time. I mean, he's obviously a very important part of the whole system now. So, I mean, I think this deserves to be recognized. And I just think also right now, there is a real thirst, a real appetite for content. And WWE needs to get it out there in order to retain the WWE network subscribers that it has. So, I mean, and these type of events that recognize veteran players usually do better than ones that are on younger people, because there's a lot more to talk about. There's a lot more to work with. So I am looking forward to it in all seriousness. How about yourself?
I mean, the thing with Triple H is that it's very easy to kind of go, oh, Triple H, he's only where he is because of who he married and all. The thing with Triple H is Triple H has a lot of great moments over his career, and he is kind of now an all-time great in a lot of ways. I mean, I will never quite be able to shake the Cornette thing of, like, he was always the guy who worked with the guy that drew the money, and you'll never really be able to sort of really kind of show any
That's not
evidence.
true. I mean, Cornette's biased. I mean, that's just simply Cornette told me that as well. It's just not true.
Well, I mean, I would disagree.
When it was, but lots of other times it wasn't.
But he's never proven on his own that he was the big draw. In fact, whenever he's been the draw, it's failed. When he was the draw as the babyface in 2002, it failed. When he was the draw as the babyface in 2009, it failed. When he was the heel champion, the ratings continued to tank. So where is the evidence that he, as a main event player post-2001, was a big draw?
Well, what about 2005 and WrestleMania that year?
Yeah, okay, maybe that is a good example. He was good then. I think that the reason that people have such an issue with Triple H, and I like him, but like, I think because there's been so many periods of kind of his ego or his getting in the way, that I think that people are kind of clouded. So, you know, for all the 2005 stuff that he did that was so great, people remember the sort of the reign of terror from 2002 to 2004. I mean, I remember watching, and I wasn't even a big WCW fan, but when Goldberg came in 2003, I'm not saying Goldberg should have been, you know, the top guy in the company and that's it, but it just felt like the feud with him and Triple H would never end, and it wasn't really that exciting to watch. You know, he would, and then, you know, the way he beat Booker T at WrestleMania 19, the stuff with RVD, you know, so I get why people are down on him, but I think that he's done a lot in the last, ever since he took over, when did he take over FCW and turn into NXT? 2012? 2011?
Yeah, around about then, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, he's done a great job with that, and I think he's done a really good job of not making himself the focal point of that. I mean, he is the focal point, obviously, when he comes out at the beginning and does all his shtick, but what I mean is that he's been very good at letting NXT kind of speak for itself for the most part. So I think that his legacy now is a much, much better legacy than it would have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you go back to 2000, he was the wrestler of the year that year. WWF had a banner year that year financially.
Sondra and I just talked about the match he had with Taka Michinoku on Raw. It was great. He put him over huge and made him look great.
Exactly. I mean, he was number one in the PS50 that year. I mean, he was our only choice. I'm not saying that that's the only barometer of success, of course. But, I mean, he was tremendous that year. And WWE just, I mean, obviously, it all went to crap. You know, once Chris Kresge went, Stephanie moved in there. And there was the big disappointment, of course, with Kurt Angle in September. That really did tarnish the year to an extent, but there was some tremendous stuff with Jericho. I mean, that was when Jericho looked like, you know, a top guy for the first time in that company, and that was when he was attached to Triple H, and that was Triple H hoisting his star higher. So, I mean, he did really well there. I think he was a big part of the success of early 2001. I mean, you know, the fact that he was actually able to defeat Steve Austin at that event. To this day, I've never been able to understand why. The February event, wasn't it, 2001?
Yeah, the three stages of hell, no way out match.
To this day, I've never been able to understand how he was able to win that match. No, but that show was a huge success, and he was a big part of that. He ended up putting The Undertaker over at WrestleMania 17. I thought that was one of the big matches on the show. You've got to remember, obviously,
I think he was amazing up until that injury of May 2001. I think he was from you know, when he won the title in 99 through to when he got injured in 01. I think he was just, I mean, you could put that 18 months up there with really anybody in the top run of how great a run that was.
It was a tremendous run. I mean, there was obviously the notable exception being the Kurt Angle business in September. They had that absolutely fabulous feud over the summer. With so much great storytelling, so much great character work, and so much like humor as well. I mean, he was just like peppered with, you know, magical moments. And then you had, 2001, he suffers injury, and I think it was May of that year in the tag match with Austin and Triple H versus Jericho and Benoit. Then he disappeared, but then he returned he actually returned to the house shows December 2001, but returned to TV. You go back and look at that rating that he drew for his comeback, and that was a huge number at the time. WrestleMania that year, 2002, was pretty much built around him, and that was a huge success. Admittedly, that was partly due to No, actually, Royal Rumble was on. That was our first pay-per-view, first Sky box office pay-per-view one in 2002. So that was partly influenced by the UK having to pay for the event for the first time. But I mean, that event was a huge success. Obviously, the match with Jericho was a flop at WrestleMania, and he did struggle that year. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, I mean, you look at like 2005, the stuff with Batista. I mean, he was the guy that made Batista into a star.
He had to do that at that point because he'd had such a bad track record with RVD, Booker T, Goldberg, all these people. He really needed to do something to sort of, you know, shut the critics up who were saying that he doesn't put MD over, doesn't do anything. And so then obviously he did everything for Batista that he could.
They had three pay-per-view series, didn't they?
Yeah, WrestleMania, Vengeance. What was the one? Backlash and Vengeance.
Backlash, and then they had Hell in a Cell match at Vengeance, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. And then and then he went through this weird point where, because he became the babyface in 07? No, 06 when he reunited DX with Shawn Michaels.
That's right. I mean, that was pretty embarrassing. I mean, they had like one. I mean, you got to remember he put Cena over at WrestleMania in Chicago in 2006.
Well, I was going to ask you this. So, you know how initially the plan was for Triple H and Cena to have the return match at WrestleMania 23? Do you think if that had went on to go ahead, that Triple H would have got the title, or do you think that he would have put Cena over again?
I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. I think by that point, actually, I think Cena would have gone over. Because by that point, he was the established player. He was the guy who was selling the merch. You know, Vince was putting, you know, investing everything in him. So I think it was Shawn Michaels got the match instead, didn't he? Because Triple had suffered the injury at the January pay-per-view, didn't he? In the match with Orton and Edge. It was a tag match, wasn't it?
Yes.
That's right. So he suffered the quad injury there. So, I mean, I think he would have put Cena over. But, I mean, maybe he wouldn't have done. I could be wrong about that. But I mean, to me, Cena was the guy, he was the goose that was laying the golden eggs by that point, to quote Bray Wyatt. So I think the emphasis, maybe Triple H would have won, but if he had beaten Cena, it would have been to set up a rematch in which Cena defeated Triple H. So in the end of the feud, I think Cena would have been the one who was standing tall, who would have been champ. So possibly Triple would have got the win there at Mania, but in the end, it would have been a Cena victory.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I'm a Triple H fan. I like him. I just think that I understand where some people are, you know, because I remember listening to an interview from one of the creative team in WWE. I think it was Andrew Goldstein, who went on. I think he worked at MTV as well. But anyway, he had said that the initial idea in 2002, when they were splitting the brands, was there was going to be a Raw champion, a SmackDown champion, and so Lesnar would take Lesnar would be the SmackDown champion, and then the Raw champion would be RVD. That was the plan. And Triple H, it was supposed to be Triple H and RVD in a tournament final. And the idea would be that you'd have RVD and Lesnar as the champions on either brand, and then you could do something at the following WrestleMania, champion versus champion, if it wasn't working out and you needed to unify the belts again. And Triple H basically, you know, used his clout to make sure that he was just sort of handed the belt instead. And I think the stuff like that is why some people have issue with him and just find it quite difficult to take him. But I mean,
you are right, Kenny. Obviously, there's numerous instances of him using self-serving behavior and playing the games and doing all the things that were designed for his own self-aggrandizement. And there was lots of times when he could have put people over, and had he done so, WWE would have been a more fruitful organization as a result. I'm not denying that he didn't do those things. Absolutely, he did. I was just pointing out that Cornette quote, which he used to me, is not true, because there are numerous instances, you know, empirical evidence which disprove that. That's all I'm stating. Absolutely, you're right. The Booker T thing, appalling. RVD. There's just so many things he's done over the years that he didn't need to do.
I don't know if Triple H hadn't been married to Stephanie, and I just don't think he would be where he is right now. I don't think he would be in the position. I don't think he would have been there. Like, because when Austin would use his clout in 99 or whatever, he was still bringing in so much business that you could kind of accept why he was doing what he did. Because it was like, well, you know, he's Austin. He brings in all this stuff. And I think that, I don't think Triple H ever really got to the Austin Rock level.
He never did.
And, you know, like I say, the two major WrestleManias where Triple H was the babyface, he was outshined by other matches on the card. You know, if you talk about WrestleMania 25 and WrestleMania 18, people think of the main events of those shows as Undertaker Michaels and Rock and Hogan. They're the two matches that people think of as the main event. And both those years, Triple H's match had a long-term story going in. I mean, the Jericho one was not very good, obviously, but I think when it comes to, he's never really been able to be. Maybe the Cornette comment specifically is not as true, but I think that there is an element of truth in the idea that he's never really been able to be that big baby face that Austin and Rock were able to be. That I think that he wished he could be.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. Yeah, I mean, just another one actually that never gets mentioned: WrestleMania 20. I mean, that was a huge success on pay-per-view, and I know there was a lot of big matches on that show, so you cannot really credit. You know,
he did drop the belt to Benoit and he tapped out in the middle of the ring, so you got given that.
Absolutely.
But did he lose to Benoit because he knew Benoit wasn't a threat? Because you could see that Benoit was never going to be a long-term champ. Because he just never had the charisma. The Benoit title reign to me was a loyalty title reign. Yeah. In a lot of ways, kind of like a Kofi Kingston one in some ways. Just like, you know, the guy's worked really hard. He's a really, you know, big part of our company. This will be a really feel-good moment.
It was a reward title reign for all the people that he had put over. That's what it was, exactly. Absolutely. But all I'm saying is that, I mean, I know there's lots of matches on that show that were huge matches that would have drawn pay-per-view numbers, pay-per-view orders, but that did go on last, didn't it? Benoit versus Michaels versus Triple H.
Yeah.
And it was a tremendous match, and that show was a smash on pay-per-view.
And so, I guess what's funny, kid, as we're talking this through and talking out, maybe the thing is that Triple H was great at sort of drawing as a heel for people to, you know, people want to see him get beat, rather than him being the big babyface that people want to see him win. Maybe that was...
I think you're right, yeah. I think you're right. Well, I'll give you that bit, Kenny. All right, you're right about that.
I've worn you down. So the big thing on SmackDown, though, I mean, I obviously want to touch on the main event and the Firefly Funhouse coming out, but before that, so Raw gets Bianca Belair in the call-ups from WrestleMania, and SmackDown gets the Forgotten Sons?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Why?
I mean, these are guys who are like, I mean, I just think that, you know, like Elias did terrible in NXT. He was just, the fans hated him. You know, they used to chant drift away at him. You know, and he ended up doing quite well in WWE, obviously nowhere near as well as they thought he was going to. And now he's like really a second match act. But I mean, Forgotten Sons, I actually thought they looked pretty good in that match. I thought they looked better in the match with Lince Dorado and Gran Metalik than they did probably ever in NXT. Not that I'm saying for a moment that they're going to be big stars on SmackDown. All I'm saying is that I actually thought it was a pretty good debut. And they were going nowhere in NXT. So I guess it was either let's bring them up or let's cut them loose. So they decided to bring them up.
I think Sondra had sent me a thing where I didn't see it. So I might get this wrong. So if you've seen it, then, you know, I'm saying I don't know for sure. But the WWE definitely put something out in their social media that was like, you'll never forget where you were when the Forgotten Sons debuted on SmackDown, or you'll always remember where you were. And I'm like, will you though? Like, I'm pretty sure that this information will have left my brain in 2 hours.
Well, we won't forget because we're all bloody housebound, aren't we?
Yeah, there's nothing else to do. Is there anything else on SmackDown you want to cover before we get to? I want to talk about Sasha and Bayley in the main event stuff. Is there anything else on the show though that you wanted to cover?
I thought Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross versus Asuka and Kairi Sane was a lot better than their WrestleMania match.
It was better.
Much tighter and sharper and crisper. So, yeah, I wish they'd had this match at WrestleMania. So I thought that was quite well done. Sadly, it looks like Dolph Ziggler and Otis is continuing because Ziggler defeated Tucker. I mean, it just feels like that storyline has peaked and has reached its natural conclusion. You know, we don't really need any more. Let's just move on. But no, it must continue.
It's going to keep going.
What else is there? I thought Nakamura was quite funny when he interrupted Braun Strowman's speech about it being the greatest moment of his career. I thought Nakamura was actually a barrel of laughs, his little promo to Strowman. I thought that was really funny. And he said, well, you know, we have a Japanese proverb and the translation is the weak are the meat and the strong eat. I delivered that really well. So I thought that was a lot of fun.
Big Nakamura with the bants.
Yeah, I thought he did well there. And, you know, Cesaro came out to distract Strowman, Nakamura, and drilled him. I mean, I don't think anyone really thought that Nakamura had a chance of defeating Strowman, but I thought that was as good as it could have been under the circumstances. I think that's probably about it, really.
Well, I did think that the Sasha and Bayley stuff was pretty fun. You know, obviously Tamina is coming out and she wants a shot at Bayley, and basically she challenged us a title match, but Bayley ends up, you know, making Sasha Banks take the match instead. And Tamina says to Sasha, and sis, your bestie just screwed you and walked off. And actually, I mean, you know, Tamina's dull as dog shit. We've been over this 100 times, but I think that the subtle stuff they're doing with Bayley and Sasha Banks is really clicking.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I said this last week on the WrestleMania review. It's like, you know, how could anyone be upset that Sasha Banks lost at WrestleMania? Because, I mean, had she won, I mean, it would then all be in reverse with Bayley being envious of her and Bayley marching towards a babyface turn. Who would care about that? This is much better with Sasha Banks. She's the one that's inevitably going to turn babyface here, and that's a really good role for her. And I think when Sasha and Bayley get in the ring this time with this storyline support that they're giving it, and I've got to say, it's hard for me to have faith in WWE because obviously they've let us down once or twice. But I've only got good thoughts about this storyline. And I think this is going to go really well. I think Tamina will defeat Sasha. Then she'll get the match with Bayley. Then Sasha will qualify for the Women's Money in the Bank match. And I think Sasha's going to win that. And then that sets up the next chapter of the story with Sasha with a briefcase and Bayley as champ. So I think it's got so much potential. There's so much mileage in this. And they've been very patient with it, very disciplined with it. I think they're really showing this is bringing out the best in WWE in terms of storytelling.
Well, you know, I did say, on, I think I said this on Twitter when Alex McCarthy of TalkSport had posted, maybe like early February, he said, you know, I think they should definitely do Bayley and Sasha at WrestleMania by a big match. And I remember saying they shouldn't do that at WrestleMania because the story's not there yet. They need to build it to make you care about it. And I think that that's what they're doing. And I think it's going to be much better that way. And if they keep this going till, say, SummerSlam, I mean, at this stage, if they can keep this going to SummerSlam and maybe, you know, I'm fairly confident that by SummerSlam, there will be a way to sort of do testing to maybe get like 100 fans in the Performance Center. I think that's a realistic thing they could do. And if they can even get that and build this Sasha and Bayley thing and people are watching it week after week after week and you finally get it in front of, you know, a few people, I say SummerSlam, and that's where Sasha cashes in or something. It could be great. It could be and because they've got such a long history and they've got that, you know, Takeover Brooklyn thing where that's so iconic. You've got to throw as much of this as you can to make it feel special, so that the people who have been invested in these characters for years and years and years feel that they're finally getting a main roster match that's worthy of the two characters that they've loved for so long.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all that, and I think they can spin it out till then. I think they've shown over the last few weeks, well, really, probably more than a few weeks now, that they're really taking the time with this one. And I think I am confident that they know where they're going. They've got a plan, and I think they're going to execute it pretty much to perfection. But yeah, if they can do the match in front of fans, it's obviously going to be far more memorable than it would be without fans.
Because if you can have, by August we have testing kits, you know, proper testing kits that are checked out, they work, and you can have, you know, 100 people who are being tested and all that, and they're allowed in, it's fine, then, you know, there's a possibility that could happen. So we'll see.
Should mention Cal Bloom lost to Sheamus. That's Wayne Bloom's son, who was a member of the Destruction Crew, the AWA World Tag Team Champions from 1989 to 1990.
Do you mean a Beverly brother?
Yeah, later a member of the Beverly Brothers. So, Cal Bloom, Wayne Bloom's son.
There was also a very big love letter video to Jeff Hardy on this show. If you don't think that they're going to do everything they can in the next 10 months to try and keep him, they are going to do everything. Because they, you know, Jeff Hardy, I mean, he has a lot to offer. And I think that they're going to want to do everything they can to hope that they can pry him away from going to AEW when his contract's up. But we'll see.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a really nice video, wasn't it, actually? Really heartfelt. And it seemed like Jeff really enjoyed doing it. And, you know, and his kids were in there on the trampoline. He was talking about the Trampoline Wrestling Federation they were in. And there's all this old footage of them when they were backyarders. And as you say, yeah, it really felt like, you know, WWE attempting to woo him before he left, you know. persuade him in advance to sign that contract. Come on, Jeff, give us another 3 years. We'll make you a star again.
Famous last words. And then the main event of SmackDown, it was a match with Braun Strowman and Shinsuke Nakamura. Braun Strowman obviously got the win, but the big talking point is post-match when the Firefly Funhouse graphic opened, and it was Bray Wyatt with a whiteboard saying the history of John Cena and Bray Wyatt. He erased the history so he could rewrite history. He then says hi to Braun, says he's so happy for him. The Lantern then says something. He says, that was a long time ago. He's learned his lesson by now. He said that, you know, he brought Strowman in from the swamp and gave him a home. We see images of it. He said that he turned his back on him and his family, but he could forgive him. All he has to do is say sorry. All the puppets are, you know, basically egging him on. And
apart from Ramblin' Rabbit, who likes Braun.
Typical Ramblin' Rabbit behaviour, eh? Wyatt tells him to shut up, and then he says, you know, all you need to do is say sorry. Strowman says he's not playing these games. Wyatt then says, you know, as one circle opens, another begins, and he says, since I brought you into this world, I'm going to take you out. And then he laughs and waves goodbye, and then Strowman cuts him off and says, anytime you want, I'm ready to let you in. And then Strowman does the happy goodbye, bye, see you later, and Wyatt's glaring into the screen as we go off there. I thought this was a really great closing segment, and I'm intrigued. What say you on The Fiend and Strowman?
Yeah, it was nice to see one of Bray's opponents finally throw it back in his direction. And it was about time someone did that, because, you know, this behaviour by Bray has been, you know, he's been this character now for about a year. It's about sort of 10, 11 months since he's been going through these routines, and he's got his stock phrases and everything. So people by now know what it is that he does, and they, as babyfaces, should be outsmarting the heel, because the babyface is supposed to outsmart the heel. You know, if they babyface is always outsmarted, he looks like an idiot. So, I mean, I thought it was very well done. I mean, obviously, Braun needs all the help he can get right now, because he just doesn't feel like a champion to me. I know he's got the belt, and I know he beat Goldberg, but it's really hard for me to really accept him as a champion at the moment. He's kind of somebody who got the job because the other guy, you know, had a serious illness and decided that for health reasons he didn't want to wrestle. So, I mean, Braun's in there as Roman Reigns' replacement right now. So I think he's got to do a lot of renovation. He's got to do a lot to rebuild his image and his reputation and his prestige, which has eroded over the last 2 years for various reasons that we've covered on this podcast. I'm sure people are already aware of. So, I mean, this is the time for Braun to really step it up and to really prove that he deserved this title and he deserved WWE's faith and this big win over Goldberg. But I thought this was a very encouraging start, Kenny. You know, Bray, or in this character that he's playing right now, it's sufficiently well established that he can be a big part of this project of getting Braun over again and making him feel like a proper champion rather than an imposter that's a substitute for somebody who can't be there. So I think this is, you know, this needs to be a joint effort, really, from Strowman, Bray and the WWE machine. So there's still work to be done. But, I'll say also, I thought the match with Nakamura was perfectly serviceable. I thought that was a good little match there. Nakamura wasn't squashed. Braun scored a commanding pinfall victory. So I thought that was well done as well. It's hard to imagine, really, given the circumstances. And obviously, there's a long way to go yet with Braun. But I thought this was, you know, this was a good starting point. And I'm a lot more hopeful of Braun's future as champion now than I was last Thursday.
Yeah, for sure. There's interesting stuff on SmackDown to lead us into what's going to happen this week. So let's close out. We'll talk about. We've got a lot of stuff we could talk about in the overrun, like Ronda Rousey, Undertaker, NXT. But let's close the main podcast here with Raw and the build to Money in the Bank. So I guess we should talk about the big controversy from Raw first of all. Really wish we didn't have to be talking about this, but we do. On Raw, there was a qualifying match for the Money in the Bank men's ladder match between Austin Theory and Akira Tozawa. And Jerry Lawler on commentary said, when Akira Tozawa went to go for a moonsault, that he was doing a ramen noodle moonsault. This has got a lot of heat from Lawler. A lot of people are very angry about this. New Jack has been posting saying, I told you all he was a racist, and all this kind of stuff. It's very awkward, and you really should not be saying stuff like that. No matter whether you don't intend it in a way that's offensive, it is offensive, and you just really shouldn't on a national TV show be able to compare an Asian guy to ramen noodles.
No. I mean, Lawler shouldn't be there. This should be, to me, this is a sacking offence. This is the straw that has broken the camel's back. I mean, he shouldn't be there anyway. There should be someone younger there who's more in touch with the public and aware of what's going on. Whenever Lawler appears on commentary, you can just tell that he doesn't watch the product, doesn't really know the stories, and he's winging it. I mean, he's been doing this for many, many years. But it's just so transparent to me now that he's just phoning it in and can't really be bothered. So even if he hadn't made this comment, he shouldn't be there anyway. I've said this before. I don't need to belabor this one. But, I mean, this should be the moment that he is just removed and someone else is put in his place. This needs to be it now. You can't say things like that on TV. Absolutely no way.
Yeah, it's just
like that on TV for years. Absolutely no chance. They just need to get rid of him immediately.
So I thought Raw had some pretty good stuff on it. We opened with a Drew McIntyre promo where he talked about, you know, thanking the fans for inviting him and the other wrestlers into their living room, the outgoing support, beating Lesnar and Big Show back to back. He's interrupted by Andrade, who comes out with Zelina Vega. They talk about Andrade being the real champion of Raw, because he's obviously the United States champion. Drew responds by going, and the crowd goes mild. That was quite funny. He ended up talking about Zelina Vega was talking about how in NXT, you know, it was Andrade who had beaten Drew, and that was what caused his injury, and how that, you know, got to him, and they brought in some realism, and that led to setting up the main event match, which was Drew McIntyre versus Andrade. They actually went on to have a really fun match, which Drew would get the win, fairly short, only about 5.5 minutes, and then post-match, Seth Rollins came out to attack Drew along with Angel Garza, and he ended up doing the stomp to him and sort of staring down as we closed the show. What did you make of the Drew stuff on this show? What do you think of the direction they've taken with him post WrestleMania? Talk me through your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think Drew's kind of coming across a little bit too nice. You know, that's the only thing that I'm concerned about right now. He's sort of just coming across as a bit too much of a nice guy. So, but I mean, I thought he set things up well there with Vega. And then he made a comment about Andrade never speaking. And then we got a rare Andrade promo. And I think this guy should speak more often on TV. I mean, people have been saying this for a long time. I probably said it before as well. And I would just like to, you know, repeat those sentiments. And I think to me, you can say, well, Brock Lesnar doesn't speak, you know, and he's a top guy. But I mean, he's there. He's established. And I think Andrade is a guy. I don't know whether he can ever really be a top guy. But I mean, I'm not saying that he can't be at this point. He possibly could be, but he needs to do some more talking out there to really let us know who he is, so we can connect with him more. So yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job setting that up. And then they had the match. Obviously, Drew had to win because, hey, he's the guy who just beat Brock Lesnar. And then Seth Rollins comes out, attacks Drew. We talked before WrestleMania, and the theory was, I think we put forth, that we were trying to work out who Drew was going to defend against after WrestleMania. And the conclusion, I think I mentioned, you probably might have mentioned it as well, was that Seth Rollins seemed like the most likely candidate to be Drew's first challenger. And then I was kind of thinking, well, it's after he lost to Kevin Owens, and obviously we said last week, Owens really needed that win, so that was the right outcome on the night. How would that affect Rollins? Could he be the next challenger to McIntyre? And he is going to be the next challenger to McIntyre. So, I mean, they haven't really got anyone else ready. So it's kind of got to be Rollins. Throughout the show, Rollins did all these short promos, didn't he? He said that his career had been crucified by his loss to Rollins. Rollins said that as the Messiah, he had risen again. You know, it was Easter Monday. Presumably, he rose on Easter Sunday, Kenny. You know, he probably just, I don't know, just get some new duds made over the last day, or eating Easter eggs, I don't know. But, you know, he was saying that as the Messiah, he'd risen. So there's a few comments from him. So it was pretty obvious from his comments in these, you know, little segments backstage that he was going to do something on the show. And it was attack Drew McIntyre. So it's really hard to know who else. I mean, was there anyone else really ready to challenge Drew at Money in the Bank? Can you think of anyone, Kenny?
I mean, I know a lot of people were saying, you know, Owen, they'd prefer if Owens had got the spot because Owens obviously had beaten Seth at WrestleMania. But there's a long history. We talked earlier on the Triple H thing. You know, Triple H beat Austin at No Way Out, but then Austin was in the main event at WrestleMania 17 because he'd won the Rumble. So these things tend to just kind of happen. And this is obviously their way of kind of interjecting Rollins in there. I think Rollins makes the most sense. I actually really like the way they've booked Drew. Like, I didn't quite understand it last week, but I do like the idea of, you know, he won the title from Brock Lesnar, and straight after it, he then beat the Big Show as well. You know, he's a fighting champion, he's taking on Andrade, he's injecting some humour into things, so he's not just this one-dimensional wrestler. I think Rollins and Drew is probably one about the best that he can do for his first feud, because Rollins is a big name. Rollins is obviously going to work around him and make him look good. Drew works really well with smaller guys. So I think this is a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the only choice. And I mean, Owens, you can't really do Owens as a babyface versus McIntyre for Drew's first post-WrestleMania feud. I mean, it needs to be a heel. It's got to be a heel. It can't be Owens. We can't have a babyface versus babyface feud because, I mean, they do play well sometimes, but I don't really think that one was going to play that well. And Rollins, even though he lost at WrestleMania, is definitely preferable to a babyface Owens as an opponent for McIntyre at the next pay-per-view.
So we also had on the show quite a lot of Money in the Bank stuff with qualifiers for the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. We had Asuka defeating Ruby Riott in a qualifying match. We also had Shayna Baszler defeating Sarah Logan in very quick succession, even though Mike Rome couldn't quite get that right and ended up saying that Logan had won. Yeah. Even if she hadn't. And also, in the women's side of things, Nia Jax got a big win over Kairi Sane. So Nia Jax, Asuka, and Shayna Baszler have all qualified. I thought that these three matches, I thought the Money in the Bank matches kind of added some stakes to Raw, which kind of feels like it's been missing recently. So I thought these matches were good, and Asuka, as always, continues to shine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, this felt like we've gone back to the old format of Raw, of we haven't got long matches from previous pay-per-views filling up the TV time. It's pretty much all first-run stuff, which is, you know, what they need to do, because this is the way things are going to be now, you know, for the foreseeable future. So they need to get into the old formula to try and make Raw a, if not must see, a show that lots of people at least will make time to watch, rather than a show that's kind of missable because there's a lot of previously run content on it. So you've got to try and get those numbers back up. And I think by doing what they did, they should do that. I mean, I thought Asuka versus Ruby Riott was really good. And after watching this, I was just thinking afterwards, why is Ruby Riott not in the Money in the Bank ladder match? I thought she did really well here. I thought she had a tremendous night. She looked like a really serious competitor. It was a hard-hitting match. I thought this was Ruby's best performance in, I couldn't even possibly, since NXT. Maybe she's had a better performance than this.
The magic of Asuka.
Yeah, I mean, she looked really good here. And she was given a ton of offense. And she was made to look like, you know, a serious performer. So, obviously, Asuka's, you know, much bigger star. And if anyone had to go over and enter the Money in the Bank ladder match, it needed to be Asuka. But yeah, I just felt a little bit bad for Ruby Riott. After a performance of this caliber, she kind of deserves something more. I thought Baszler versus Sarah Logan. Sarah Logan somehow each week manages to look younger. I don't know how she does that, but she just sort of looks younger each time I see her. Match was stopped after Baszler stomped on Logan's arm. I mean, it looked really nasty the way, I mean, she's done that move before. That was a staple of her matches back in NXT. And she does it really well, actually. And I thought Logan did a tremendous job selling it as well. So you could almost believe it was a genuine injury that Logan had suffered. And then the ring announcer claimed that Logan was the winner. And then shortly afterwards, Tom Phillips had to correct the ring announcer and say that Baszler was the winner by stoppage. The referee stopped the match because Logan was unable to continue after Shayna had stomped on her arm. So Shayna will now advance to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And as you mentioned, Nia Jax scored a very convincing victory over Kairi Sane. I would have liked to have seen this match last a little longer, but clearly Nia's the priority. Seems to me Kairi's just working a contract out now. Can't imagine she's going to stick around. So if she's not staying and extending a deal with WWE, then yeah, by all means, you know, use this to put Nia Jax over and make her look like a monster. So, I mean, that's three strong contenders there from Raw, isn't it, for the Money in the Bank ladder match?
Yeah.
Really, you know, it's all-star cast, Kenny.
All-star cast. We also saw some men. We saw Austin Theory qualify for the men's. This was a Money in the Bank match, wasn't it? Or am I getting that wrong? I think it was a Money in the Bank. I'm just making that up now. Yeah, no, it was just a regular match. Because next week are the men's ones, which will be Rey Mysterio and
Murphy next week, isn't it? Rey Mysterio, because he did a promo about it backstage.
Yeah, Mysterio, Murphy, and Aleister Black and Austin Theory, I think, are the two matches next week.
Yes, because Aleister Black, he defeated only Larkin, didn't he, earlier on the show?
So yeah, I thought overall though Raw was a fun show. We also heard from Charlotte Flair. She's talking up her match she's going to be having with Io Shirai for the NXT Women's title. Bobby Lashley and Lana still showed a bit of tension. So I thought overall the show was pretty lively and a good watch.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the best Raw in a number of weeks. I mean, not that that's saying a whole lot for reasons that I've already gone through. But I thought you had a good energy, lots happening, plenty of people involved. Didn't feel like they were running on a skeleton crew, even though they kind of are. But I think they made the best of all the talent that were there. So, yeah, I mean, Lashley defeated No Way Jose. Lana's at ringside. You know, Lashley told Lana to shut up when she's giving advice. Obviously, there's trouble ahead there. You know, Kenny's obviously upset about that, you know. But
devastated, absolutely devastated.
Yeah, and you know, just one quote that another quote that Seth Rollins made prior to his appearance, just before the show went off the air. He said, "Tonight, to all the non-believers, I stomp out all doubt." So yeah, he was telegraphing the news there that he was going to curb stomp someone before the show ended, and absolutely he did. Probably, I mean, I don't know whether it was the low point of the show. Actually, yeah, I think he probably was, and you'll probably agree with me, Kenny. War Raiders beat Ricochet and Cedric Alexander. And we've learned that the War Raiders are going to be pursuing the Street Profits.
I think that the sign that the Viking Raiders are still not working is that I would say 9 out of 10 times both of us get their names wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Because we both struggle to care so much about them. Some weeks it's the Viking Experience, some weeks it's the War Experience. We just make it up as we go along. So.
Yeah, that's right. It's the Viking Raiders, not the War Raiders. You know, I'd like to say that I'm sorry about that, but the truth is I just don't care. But thank you for putting me straight, Kenny.
Of course, that's what I'm here for. But we will be back next week with more. But if you want more of us, you can head over to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where there's bonus content, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews, old Thunder reviews from Ollie and KJ, retro with me and Sondra. And then also Finn has got a What's Going Down article up there. There's another article going up from Finn soon, which is a comments-based article, which I'm looking forward to. Some lot of fun stuff in that. So Patreon is the place to be if you want to support us in this time of need for content creators, because this is the time where we kind of struggle and we kind of need your support. So we do appreciate everybody who has chipped in to get the content from us, and we continue to try and make it worth your while.
Yeah, and a time also when you might need entertainment, and we're here to provide.
That is what we're here for. Finn, have you got any plugs?
Not really, no, not really. Just, just Patreon. We're going to be talking about loads of stuff after this. We're talking about Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. We're going to be talking about Lana's comments, about Ronda Rousey and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, you know, please check that out if you can, our overrun, which we'll be recording right after this.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you very much for all your support, and we will talk to you soon. If I'm sad tonight.